one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies win another series. They are playing good baseball right now? Is that really? Is that what's happening right now? Seems to be. Phillies take 2 out of 3 from the Chicago White Sox, a spunkier than you would have imagined Chicago White Sox team in Philadelphia over the course of the weekend. And this time it's the bats that carry the day, really for the first time all season. So we'll talk about a very interesting and entertaining series the Phillies played against Chicago. I think we might have to call it the Brandon Marsh series. I'm sure we'll have Justin say a few things about that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about Phillies All-Stars. We'll talk about Andrew Painter. We'll see if we can squeeze that all into this roundtable edition of Hittin' Season. Joining me as they do every week on the roundtable is Liz Rocher and the aforementioned Justin Clue. You, of course, know Justin from his work over at Baseball Prospectus, and of course as the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, which takes a deep dive into what the 1941 Phillies were doing during Joe DiMaggio's record 56 game hitting streak. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
Pretty good. I think it's not till July 24th that we'll ever see the Phillies in their City Connects again, so I feel great. I feel pretty purged, I guess is the word.
For now.
It will return at the, you know, in a few weeks, but long enough to forget that they exist. And really, in this reality, that's the best you can ask for.
I like wearing mine mostly because it fits real well, and I don't hate them generally, but for what they do, they are hard on the eyes sometimes, and they don't play well in them. Which is probably my bigger issue with the
used to be when you didn't play games. Well, in a new uniform, you got rid of it. You know, it went into the fire barrel pretty quick. Didn't take long for players to decide, nah, this ain't happening. Too much going on, I would guess, contractually and marketing wise to make that kind of decision anymore. But yeah, unfortunately, no longer an option. And I'm just kind of I don't have good feelings watching them take the field in those uniforms because, like you said, their struggles when they are wearing them.
And it seems like Jesus Luzardo pitches in them every single time.
Oh, he gets them every time. They actually, I think it was Sean Kane on NBC Sports Philly was pointing out that, like, yeah, that he has for some reason pitched in that uniform so many times. It's not probably the reason he struggles occasionally, but it certainly can't help.
It certainly could be a reason. I don't think anybody should be ruling it out at this point.
Prove that it's not, Liz.
Yeah.
What?
That's Liz Rocher. That's Liz Rocher, editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal, who we're putting on the spot there. Yeah, Liz, explain it.
Sounding alarmed and confused, as usual. I don't know what I'm explaining now.
Liz Rocher, how you feeling, Liz? Why Jesus Luzardo, whether or not his struggles are directly related to the City Connect jerseys?
Because I hate them. Like, hard on the eyes is like an understatement for me. I've really come to dislike them, and I feel bad that he has to pitch in them so often, because it's just like there's so many photos of him in those uniforms pitching, and I'm like, no, it's just unfair.
It's not a great jersey. The hat is fantastic. I think the City Connect hat is very good. But unfortunately, the jersey script takes away from it. But we've litigated this all before, hopefully they will. I would just like to see Major League Baseball do away with all of the City Connect jerseys. We don't need them anymore. Let's move on. Let's find something else. Let's bring back those. Remember they had the futuristic uniforms back in like the 90s. They would like, here's what players are wearing in the 2020s, and they were made from like snakeskin and it was pretty weird.
The ironic part is that they always assume when they do something like that, which they don't do often enough, they assume how crazy and innovative and outside the lines our style choices will be in the future. And then the future arrives and they're like, yeah, no, I mean, it's got to be like marketable. Like,
right.
we got to be able to like sell this. It's not going to be weird or crazy. You know, it's going to be a reference to Philadelphia history, because maybe that's an angle we haven't tried yet.
You know, the next City Connect jerseys.
City Connects. What of the money, John? The billionaires need their money. And
well,
if
the
they don't
is,
sell us City Connects, man, they won't get that money.
They are doing away with them. They're just replacing them with new ones in the name of continuing to sell. Like the Nationals have new City Connect jerseys. Like they're teams that are on the second round already. And we'll just be doing that forever. And you're right. We don't need to relitigate the uniforms. It's more just this is a celebration that for maybe like 8 weeks or so, the Phillies won't have to wear them. And so we can do away with that particular part of their misfortune.
In the City Connect jerseys, the Phillies beat the White Sox 8-6. It was the first time since
after all this they won in the City Connects recently.
Right.
After all this complaining.
They are
it wasn't the cleanest of wins, but
no, but they are 1-0 in their last one games in the City Connect jerseys. So we are rolling now. They won 8-6 on Friday, the first time since May 15th the Phillies had 10 or more hits in a game, and it was the first time since May 18th that they scored 5 or more runs in a game. You had Brandon Marsh and Adolis Garcia with home runs in that one. Phillies lost 6-3 on Saturday. Bowman Marsh hit homers, but it was a bad start from Andrew Painter. We'll talk about that in a second. And then on Sunday, Phillies win 9-5. The first time in 3 weeks, 21 days, the Phillies won a game by more than 3 runs. Matt Gelb with that little nugget after the game. So this was, as I said at the top, a series in which the bats really carried the day. The Phillies starters did not have a great series. Luzardo in the City Connects went 6 innings, but gave up 7 hits, 5 runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. His ERA now at 4.56 on the season. On Saturday, Andrew Painter didn't make it out of the 5th inning. 4 2/3, 8 hits, 6 runs. 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. His ERA now 6.21. And then on Sunday, Aaron Nola also did not get out of the 5th inning. 4 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. His ERA 5.86. You know, we've been talking so much about the starting pitching here, and really, Liz, we're focusing on Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler, because if you look at the ERAs of 3/5 of the Phillies starting rotation, 4.56 for Luzardo, 5.86 for Nola, and 6.21 for Andrew Painter. But instead of focusing on the negative of the pitching, I think the bats, we've been really hard on the bats. It was a nice series for the offense in Philadelphia over the course of the weekend, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes. I heard the phrase, "That's a nice piece of hitting," from John Kruk a number of times, and I agreed every time. It's one of those phrases that I love and loathe because it gets overused, but there were some nice pieces of hitting during this weekend. It was nice to see guys take advantage of mistakes that were made. It was nice to see Brandon Marsh redeem himself after a really bad-looking missed catch in the outfield on Sunday. You know, it's all, the bats are coming around in a way we didn't think that, in a way we feared they wouldn't, you know, and this season is long and there will be other, you know, valleys as well as more peaks, but it's nice to know that they can do this still, right? I mean, it's been 3 weeks since they've scored, it was double digit runs, it's too many weeks.
Yeah, and Justin, really what's been happening here is you've had the star players on this team really carrying them, and the rest of the team, you know, you just need kind of the middle of the road players to play middle of the road, and that hasn't been happening, you know, with Alec Bohm and with Bryson Stott and JT Realmuto and Adolis Garcia really being not just mediocre but awful for the first part of this year. In this series, all of those guys got big hits. Alec Bohm got some big hits. Bryson Stott got big hits. Adolis Garcia hit 2 home runs with incredible bat flips involved in both of them. You know, that's really what's going to drive this team forward. That's what's going to be the key to this team's success, is can those 4 guys that I just mentioned do what they did this weekend more often? And this can't be just like a one-off type thing.
You know, when Shane Victorino retired, I and a bunch of other Phillies writers wrote stories about how, like, you can't win a World Series without Shane Victorino. And the whole point being that, like, yeah, you build the star core, but if you're really not getting acceptable, or in Shane's case, like, stud-level offense from a guy you pulled off a scrap heap or signed as an afterthought, or in his case was a Rule 5 pick, when you start getting good performances from those guys, that's how you know you've built a great team. And also, like, this could be your year if even like your backup guys, your supporting guys, are coming through in big ways. And like you said, we've seen Harper and Schwarber really play and hit well this year, but we've also seen how they just can't do this alone. And obviously Brandon Marsh is part of that group too, but he's a little different of a story because he had to change to reach this level, whereas Harper and Schwarber were expected to be at this level. And so, like, that's been great to see, but it's you can't help but imagine how much more effective this lineup could be if just one, or dare I say even two, guys started playing at a more acceptable level, like just a little, like I'd say even like a half step hotter, I'd settle for. If Adolis Garcia was hitting like 250 on a regular basis, there's probably a game or two along the way that the Phillies win instead of lose. So to just see that lineup more would be really encouraging. And when a lineup is struggling the way the Phillies have this year, you know, the expectations are high, the payroll is high, the production is low. You really start turning things into, you know, compartmentalizing. Like, for a guy like Garcia, he's coming out there like, all right, we've all heard the stories about how he came in on his off day and he's putting the extra work in and everything. And that's great. But like, you just start making things smaller. Like, okay, I gotta like do well in this at bat. And then if that expands to, okay, I gotta do well in this game. And you as a fan are watching and going like, okay, so he can do that. He can do that. And then just watching him have success over a full series is like, all right, he can do that. Cause we actually really hadn't even seen that yet, but he managed to stay consistently effective for three games and you saw the difference. And now the question is, okay, was that happening because he was for some reason very comfortable against the White Sox, or will it continue against the Blue Jays in Toronto? Will it continue away from Citizens Bank Park? But that's just like the pathway of the struggling slugger. You're watching that happen. And, you know, even just expanding to a full series, you saw the impact of what this offense can be. And obviously we're going to talk about Brandon Marsh and gush about Brandon Marsh. And, you know, it's great to see them like, you know, like Liz was saying, like taking advantage of situations. It's also just great to see them make solid contact. That's what some of these guys were missing.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Alec Bohm had as many hits as Brandon Marsh over the weekend and was like, you know, not putting up the same numbers. He didn't have a 3-home run series or anything, but he was up. He knocked in the same amount of runs as Brandon Marsh throughout this series. So, like, he was also contributing. And again, you see the difference. Another thing I want to point out is this team went 5 for 5 in stolen base attempts throughout this three-game series, which is also, you know, not a hallmark of their game, but something they can use to be more effective. Lastly, I'll just ask, was that a missed catch for Brandon Marsh in my memory? That was landing in no man's land. He was close to it, but didn't make it. And then he did not handle the recovery well at all. And it rolled into the corner.
The miscatch was more just like a catch-all term. I wasn't trying to besmirch him in any way. I just remember it falling in front of him and him not running too hard to catch it. I think there was some discussion about whether or not he should have called for it. And then after it, it was bad.
Your point, there's a great reason to believe that a mistake made by a Phillies player is not necessarily going to come back out and make up for it in the way that you want to like believe he can. But Brandon Marsh can, and Brandon Marsh did, in the same way that Real Muto like made up for calling that fastball that ended Christopher Sanchez's scoreless streak. He was like, I got to go back out there and make up for my mistake. And he did, and he hit a home run, and he got the run back, and it was great. You can't always come through in those moments, but the Phillies, you know, it's another sign of the kind of heater they're on right now, that they can come through in those moments, and they can make up for their mistakes. And that was a big part of this series, too. I feel like we had not seen the offense run the table for even like one full game, let alone a full series, the way they did in this series. That like the starting pitching didn't rule the day. They needed support. We keep saying like, oh, okay, well, you know, these guys can have a bad day in some exceptions. That's totally acceptable in some cases. But the offense has to be there to back them up. And rarely has that been the case this year. Not so against the White Sox. This team showed up offensively in a way it never has. And it's just good to see that dimension of this team before, you know, the All-Star break.
Yeah, I just some of the, Liz, you mentioned it, and how often John Kruk talked about the better at-bats, and they did. They just worked counts so much better in this series. But the Phillies have one of the best hard hit ball rates in Major League Baseball. Like you look at hard hit percentage, it's fourth or fifth best in baseball, even coming into this series. But they're just hitting a ton of grounders. Like everything's into the ground. And so you were just kind of like, if they can start to elevate the ball, then this team can actually do a little damage. We started to see that this weekend. Alec Bohm's swing has gotten a lot shorter. It was so long at the start of the season. He's much quicker to the ball right now at the plate, and we're seeing him hitting line drives to every part of the outfield, right field, right, you know, down the right field line, right up the middle. I mean, he's smashing line drives pretty much everywhere right now. And he's on top of the fastball, which he was not earlier in the season. We're seeing with Bryson Stott starting to pick things up a little bit. Adolis Garcia, though, is the big key here, right? I mean, I don't know what happened on Monday when he came in during the off day, but he came in with a better approach on Tuesday, is swinging at less stuff out of the strike zone, seems to be able to catch up to the fastball more, and started to elevate the baseball. He had a big RBI double in one of the games, two home runs in the game. And you can see, if this guy gets the ball in the air, he's going to hit home runs. It's just he hasn't been able to get the ball in the air. So that was the encouraging thing from this series. And it was the last series in which the Phillies were going to play a team over 500 for a little while. They just played 21 straight games against teams over 500. The Phillies went 14-7 during that stretch. They are now 26-11 under Don Mattingly. Only the Brewers have a better record during that time, just a half a game better. And since Don Mattingly took over, they're 13-5 against teams currently over 500. That's since the managerial change. So some things coming together offensively for the Phils. And specifically Brandon Marsh. And let's dive into some Brandon Marsh fun here, because he's turning himself into an all-star. He's turning himself into one of the best hitters in baseball, which I never would have thought that sentence was going to come out of my mouth. But you look at some of the numbers, and going back to May 1st of last year, the consistency of Brandon Marsh has been there all along, but now he's also doing it off of left-handed pitching. Marsh hit a home run in every one of the three games in this series against the White Sox. His first on Friday was off of Anthony Kay, a very tough left-hander who had not given up a home run to a lefty all year. Brandon Marsh took him deep, and I couldn't believe this statistic when it flashed on the screen. It was Brandon Marsh's first home run against a left-handed starting pitcher since July 16th, 2022. He played for the Angels. Then he had never hit a home run off a left-handed starter in a Phillies uniform. I can't wrap my mind around that.
Do you not believe that? I believe that instantly. That sounds, I would have guessed that.
It seems very very Phillies.
Very Phillies. It would have been very on brand. But now Brandon Marsh continues to lead the league in hitting at .338. He has a .521 slugging percentage. He has a weighted runs created of .145, 8 home runs, 30 RBIs, 33 runs. His OPS now up to .890 on the season. He continues to play. He's been an above average hitter for his position every year he's been a regular with the Phillies starting in 2023. But his improvement against left-handed pitching, I want to ask this to you, Justin, if you think it coincides with Don Mattingly giving him an opportunity now and declaring him an everyday player, because I feel like Rob Thomson gave him a chance to hit off of left-handers, but maybe in retrospect wasn't a long enough leash. I don't know. He's never hit well against lefties until this year. The numbers bear it out.
Yeah. In Marsh's case, well, in anyone's case, there's got to be a different mentality. And I think you hear players talk about this in knowing where, like, what your role is and knowing if you're going to be playing. And, you know, Rob Thomson was good at keeping people informed, but Brandon Marsh, you know, though he would never admit it openly in a negative way, of course wants to play every day. You know, you just saw in that great quote about getting swapped out for Sosa during that key at bat, he was like, yeah, of course I want to play, but, you know, it was determined that was the better matchup, and I love him, I love Sosa and everything, and you're just like, yeah, he wants to be out there. And I think Mattingly, maybe that's just like a difference between Thomson and Mattingly, that Mattingly saw what Marsh was doing and was like, I get the platoon idea. I get what the numbers say, but if it were me, I'm going to give this guy a shot on a more regular basis just to see, you know, if he like just goes into cruise control in the way that we think he's going to at this high level. And, you know, maybe he wouldn't have. Maybe there were other conditions in play that would have prevented Marsh from really going off like this. But I think you gotta say part of it is the playing time. You know, a guy getting the chance to get comfortable and not wonder or think, you know, oh, I'm not going to be playing these days this week because we're going to be facing a lefty, or this team has a pretty lefty dominant, but they carry a lot of lefties and like they just don't want me out there. It makes total sense. But, you know, if you want to see what a guy can do, you got to let him play. And Mattingly is letting Brandon Marsh play. And the times you've heard Marsh, you know, reference Mattingly, I think, you know, there's plenty of respect there. But again, as has been said many times before, what does Brandon Marsh not like? I mean, that's the thing with him. Bryce Harper is liquid baseball. You can put him anywhere on the field and he'll probably play pretty well. Brandon Marsh is kind of like, I don't know, he's kind of like liquid baseball that cracks the glass. Like, he just runs at a at a higher temp, and he's less, he may be a little more volatile of liquid baseball, but if you put him where, you know, you put him where he can succeed in like a corner outfield spot and you let him play every day, he's going to fill that space with like some sizzling offense, which, you know, at this point in his career, he's what, like 28 years old. It's exactly what you wanted to see from Brandon Marsh. It's exactly what you wanted to see from all three of these young guys, Boehm, Stott, and Marsh. But you're seeing it from Marsh now because, you know, he figured something out. And, you know, part of that is getting the chance to play. So I do think that that is a factor, to answer your question, in his success. But right now, all you can really do is just sit back and watch, because everybody who's waiting for this to tail off at some point has been disappointed. And when we're talking about All-Stars, I think you got one right here.
Well, we're going to get into the All-Star question more specifically here in just a second, because I think there's some Phillies that have some fascinating candidacies for the All-Star game, and I think you could make an argument yes or no for all but really one of them, or maybe two of them. But Liz, I mean, here are his batting averages against left-handed pitching by season, going back to 2022. It was 188 in 2022, 229 in 2023, 192 in 2024, 197 last year, and now all of a sudden up to 294. I don't know if this is just a kid who has matured and figured it out, but we saw something similar with Kyle Schwarber, who used to post similar batting averages against left-handed pitching, and now all of a sudden is an above-average hitter against left-handers. I mean, so, you know, you credit a guy who is pigeonholed into a platoon role, who has hit his way out of a platoon role. And that's really kind of, you know, if Bryson Stott's listening, so Bryson's got to do too. He's got to kind of prove, like, you can't take me out. I'm too valuable to this team for you to take me out of the lineup.
I think one of Rob Thompson's major issues was that he didn't know how to let guys play their way into more playing time. I mean, sometimes he could recognize it, but Brandon Marsh was one of those things that we were all hitting our heads against the wall. Like, give him another chance. Like, we think he's doing well this year. Let him do it. And Mattingly came in and looked at him and said, I think there's something here, and gave him more playing time. And Brandon Marsh deserves all the credit in the world, but there's a reason the Phillies didn't fire Kevin Long. And it's because I think they understand that changes that are made in someone's hitting don't always pay off immediately. Sometimes it's a growth process of routine, doing things over and over and over again until they are so ingrained that you can now sort of stop paying attention to how you're, you know, what you're doing, and look at how you're doing it. I think that Kevin Long has done some incredible things. And I mean, two hitters on the same team to increase their numbers against lefties in two consecutive years is an incredible accomplishment for any hitting coach.
Yeah, and as a left-hander himself, I think Kevin Long takes particular pride in that. And I will say this, too, about Kevin Long. On Friday night, when Adolis Garcia hit his home run, he was so happy.
Oh,
Kevin Long,
gosh,
was so happy. Garcia,
he was so happy.
He came back to the dugout. He was thrilled for Adolis Garcia hitting that home run on Friday. Couple other Brandon Marsh numbers, just to kind of lock this in for folks. Going back to May 1st of last year, which is a year and a month ago, he's hitting .316, Brandon Marsh is. Only one player in Major League Baseball has a higher batting average than Marsh in that span, and that is Yandy Diaz of the Rays at .317. Over his last 40 games, Brandon Marsh is hitting .375 with a .997 OPS. Overall this year, as I mentioned, a .338 average with an .889 OPS. And over the last calendar year, going back to June 8th of last year, a .320 batting average with an .867 OPS. Brandon Marsh is kind of locking himself in. So, but that kind of takes us to the All-Star question about Brandon Marsh. And really, I want to talk about six Phillies here who I think have established themselves as All-Star candidates. And a lot of this is going to be based on, you know, who the fans vote into the game. If an undeserving player gets voted in, you know, it might knock out a player who might be deserving. But I would have said coming into the weekend that looking at the different outfielders in the National League, I wasn't sure that Brandon Marsh was going to be able to kind of crack the ceiling there, because, you know, he didn't have many home runs coming into the weekend. He only had 5 home runs coming into the weekend, and although he had a high batting average, you know, in terms of wins above replacement, he was, I think, 11th or 12th in terms of wins above replacement coming into the weekend. But after having a big weekend, Brandon Marsh now ranks 9th among National League outfielders in Fangraphs wins above replacement. The players ahead of him right now are O'Neill Cruz, Ian Happ, Michael Harris II, Jordan Walker, Andy Páez, James Wood, Corbin Carroll, and Pete Crow Armstrong. However, offensively, if you're just looking at offensive numbers right now, Brandon Marsh's weighted runs created and OPS rank 5th among all National League outfielders. So he is certainly, Justin, playing his way into consideration. I think there's a lot more growing national enthusiasm for Brandon Marsh's All-Star candidacy. He's being talked about now on MLB Network, and he's being talked about on, you know, MLB Radio and all. And it's certainly, I think, it's getting out that the kind of season Brandon Marsh is having right now. And I don't know if the game being in Philadelphia this summer is going to have anything to do with maybe a guy like Brandon Marsh making it onto the All-Star team as a manager's selection or whatever. But you said just a second ago, Brandon Marsh is an All-Star. Kind of reading the names that I just read and where he ranks, kind of talk a little bit more about that, Justin. Like, you're pretty sure he's an All-Star.
Yeah, you can read down the list of the guys with higher numbers than Brandon Marsh right now, but there's a certain type of All-Star for which Brandon Marsh is a perfect fit. And the fact that the game is in Philadelphia puts this over the top. I'm not talking about a guy who's hitting 270 and it's like a fun little miracle and look, he figured something out. This is a guy who is now like just bashing his way through all the pitching that used to flummox him. He's become an everyday player. And since like last July 15th, he's got the highest batting average among hitters with at least 200 plate appearances. And the only two guys ahead of him are Bo Bichette and George Springer. I don't see how you deny. Why deny this? He is streaking towards beloved national All-Star figure. I mean, again, being in Philadelphia, if you were anticipating, if the Phillies had like righted the ship and they wound up like rolling into this having like a mid season or like a 1996 season the last time it was here, then I still think you're getting like a commissioner's pick for Bryce Harper to appear in it, and like Kyle Schwarber is required by law to appear in the Home Run Derby. Like, I'm not even against these things. Like, that's what hosting the All-Star game should get you. You know, I know they had 8 All-Stars, which is the most ever, just a couple of years ago in somebody else's stadium. But I still think, you know, there's got to be some appeasement and enjoyment for the home crowd. And again, that doesn't even have to be the biggest factor here, because Marsh has been playing that well. There's still time for him to continue playing this well and perhaps overtake some of the guys who are ahead of him. And I'm sure people outside of Philadelphia are going to look at this more statistically and like, well, this guy deserves it and this guy doesn't. From a pure entertainment marketing standpoint, Brandon Marsh is a guy who figured something out. He's having the best season of his career. He's getting talked about on the national level. He is so fun. He gives you perfect media. His media training's off the charts. He is a wonderful golden retriever of a player that people love to interact with. And he's like probably a go-to choice for those ridiculous in-game interviews that they're definitely going to do during the All-Star game. He's got a beard, he's got a personality, and the game is happening in his city's home. Like, this feels like a slam dunk. I don't know why like you would deny that this guy is primed to be on the state, like front and center on the stage at the All-Star game. Now, granted, I think he does have to keep playing. It is only early June. If he goes in the other direction here for a couple of weeks, that probably robs you of some of that momentum. And yeah, this conversation isn't. But if the decision was being made today, I wouldn't really care if there were like 8-9 names ahead of him statistically. Doesn't have to be the starter, but get him in there. You know, get him in there, make him visible. He deserves it. He's earned it. And he would do really well. So I don't know why you'd deny that, even if it is more of a, you know, you gotta work the marketing push angle in a little more than the statistical one. And I guess for some people that's sacrilege, but I think this is a fun enough exhibition that you can let somebody in because they're playing really well and they're just a joy to watch. Like, it's a great story. Let them in. There'll be other Phillies All-Stars too. So, you know, they've played well enough that he won't be the sole rep and it won't be depressing. Yeah, let him in. I mean, he deserves it.
I think, Liz, I think on the merits, Justin is 100% right. I think Brandon Marsh is having an All-Star season. I think he should be in the All-Star game. Here's my worry is that the fans are going to vote in some people who are less deserving, right? I think there's a good chance Ronald Acuña Jr. gets voted, and he's having a good year. He's having a very good year. He's not having as good a year as Brandon Marsh is, but Acuña Jr., I'd be very surprised if he's not voted in. I would be very surprised if Juan Soto isn't voted in by the fans. And he has a slightly lower wins above replacement than Brandon Marsh does, but the offensive numbers, and he's played fewer games because I think Juan Soto missed 12 games due to injury. But that's my worry. And then you have like a Kyle Tucker, you know, Dodgers fans. Are they gonna load up the roster with these three guys who I don't think are having as good a season as Brandon Marsh? And so now you've got to try and shoehorn Marsh in. I mean, how many outfielders they take? Maybe seven or eight. So that leaves four spots. One of them you'd like to see go to Brandon Marsh, but Pete Crow Armstrong is there, and Corbin Carroll's having a great season, and James Wood is having a great season, and Andy Páez is having a great season. I mean, I'm concerned about the numbers game with Brandon Marsh, even though I think he totally deserves it. I think it's going to be the fans that mess this up, if anybody messes it up.
The fans always do something stupid, and yet deserving players make their way onto the team anyway. Everyone knows that this All-Star game has been a long time coming. It means a whole lot to the Phillies organization. They're going to want to do good things, like put Brandon Marsh, the best hitter on the Phillies and one of the best hitters in baseball for the last calendar year. There's room for him on that team. I mean, you could say he's got a great story, but he's the best hitter on the Phillies. That alone gives him an All-Star case. If every team deserves an All-Star, and I believe every team deserves an All-Star hitter and pitcher, then there's no question. And I think, like, it's not like MLB doesn't know that the fan vote is weird. I actually am pretty sure they manipulate the fan vote every year to do whatever they want, and that's fine. Like, I'm not trying to push a conspiracy theory, because if they do that, I don't care. Like, I think there'll be... Do they want to make Philly fans unhappy when they think of this? If Brandon Marsh isn't out there, it will be a big deal, and fans in the stadium will make their feelings known.
I hope the fact this game's being played in Philadelphia factors into this. I really do.
It has to. I mean, Ronald Acuña Jr. is a better and extremely cool and entertaining player who deserves to be an All-Star probably more than Brandon Marsh. I don't care if he gets cut and Brandon Marsh makes the team in his place because this is happening in Philadelphia. If Phillies fans can't stuff the ballot for Brandon Marsh for the first home All-Star game in 30 years, frankly, it's embarrassing and unacceptable. Like, we have stuffed the ballot for people in other All-Star games that weren't even about Philadelphia. It was just like, whether it was the final vote or they were just having a good year, so every guy at every position was getting a ton of votes, even if they didn't deserve it. This isn't even a case like that. You can stuff the... You have what little control that... Yes, Liz is probably right. There's probably some conspiratorial aspects to this. But you can, as far as we know, stuff the ballot for whoever you want. And Phillies fans should absolutely be doing that for Brandon Marsh this year.
This is your call, Phillies fans, to get on it right now and officially start stuffing the ballot for Brandon Marsh. This is your time. This is your call. This is your duty. To help America celebrate its 250th birthday, it is your duty as a patriotic, Constitution-abiding American to stuff the ballot box and elect Brandon Marsh to the Major League Baseball starting outfield for the National League. That's what we're calling for here. There's no excuse for it not to happen.
Let's watch Amen. Juan Soto work a walk or like drive a ground ball straight into the earth and bounce it to second base. Yeah. Woo. Great stuff. Mets rock. No, Brandon Marsh. Really the only answer.
Let's do it. All right, Phillies fans, you're on watch now. It's your responsibility. If it doesn't happen, you have only yourselves to blame. Let's run over the other five candidates as I see them. And if there's somebody else that pops into your mind you think is deserving of conversation, you know, we could do it. But I think we all believe and know for sure that Christopher Sanchez will be an All-Star, provided he stays healthy and provided he doesn't, pitch right before the All-Star game, or they're concerned about, you know, rest or whatever. But I think he is probably the leading candidate. Him and Jacob Mizorowski to start the All-Star game, and it being in Philadelphia, I would certainly believe that Christopher Sanchez should start the All-Star game if things continue on. Agreed on that, on that point?
That's so cool.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if the guy who kept Sanchez off the All-Star roster last year then takes his spot to start in Philadelphia at the All-Star game? Unacceptable. I'm learning I actually have a lot of assumptions about the Phillies getting, you know, roster favors because the game is hosted in Philadelphia, and I don't know if that's actually going to be true. Certainly won't be in every case. But again, if they let Mizorowski take Sanchez's spot for a game in Philadelphia, I mean, Rob Manfred is shockingly dumb in these matters. He does not understand how the fans' brain works and like why they support things that they do. It's exactly the kind of thing I think he would let happen, but it would be, again, inexcusable. There should be four starting Phillies on the roster, and then Duran closes the game out. That's how I think the All-Star game should go, and Sanchez is one of those guys.
I don't know if the commissioner is even that stupid. He was very close with David Montgomery, and I do not think he wants to mess with the, you know, the unresting ghost of the Phillies, the paterfamilias. Like, what
I
want to
assume
doing?
That, but I can't.
I know.
Given
absolutely.
I cannot.
I agree with you, but I'm saying, like, he'll be there, and he's not a dullard. He's just an idiot, if you understand what I mean.
He's a moron,
maybe you don't.
But not
he's
stupid,
a,
yes.
He's a certain kind of stupid. And I think he'll understand that this needs to happen, because if it doesn't, it will be a story. That's what we have to understand. All the things that we're talking about right now, they'll be national stories, because the Phillies are hosting the All-Star game, and these are Phillies players who are clearly deserving of All-Star spots. And so this will be in the conversation. People will be talking about Christopher Sanchez starting and Brandon March deserving a spot and whether or not they do deserve one. And I think everyone should be talking about that, because the answer is clearly yes for like five different reasons.
All right. So let me read you the other four names, and then we can kind of discuss them as a group, whether, you know, who we think will get in and who we think will not get in. I put Zach Wheeler on the list. Among starting pitchers with 50 innings pitched this year, his 2.31 ERA ranks 7th. He's 9th in strikeout-to-walk ratio. The fielding independent pitching is a little high, 21st in the National League, 3.52, but he has come back and has dominated since returning to the starting rotation. You've got Joan Duran, who's 1.1 wins above replacement, tied for 2nd in the National League. His 1.31 ERA is 7th, but he is 15 for 15 in save opportunities. That is the second most saves in the National League. He's also 2nd in strikeout rate in the National League, and he has allowed no earned runs in any save opportunities so far this year. 15 for 15. That is the most saves by a Phillies pitcher through the team's first 63 games since Gianmar Gomez had 19 in 2016. All right, so you've got Joan Duran, you've got Zach Wheeler, Kyle Schwarber. He's 2nd in wins above replacement among DHs behind Otani. He leads the National League in home runs with 23. The next closest are three guys with 17. So he is lapping the field in home runs. His 579 slugging percentage leads the National League, and his 937 OPS overall in the National League is 2nd behind only Shohei Otani. And then you got the interesting case of Bryce Harper, who is 8th in wins above replacement among first basemen, 2nd in home runs among first basemen, 6th in RBIs, 2nd in weighted runs created, and 3rd in OPS among first basemen. So, Liz, which of those four, well, you know, give me who do you think is in, who do you think is out with those four? Wheeler, Duran, Schwarber, Harper. Who's in, who's out?
All right, I'll say Wheeler's probably out, least of all because I think he doesn't want to do it. And I think people will look at him coming and missing some starts. I think it'll count against him. And I don't think that's a terrible thing. I'm just imagining what would happen to Citizens Bank Park if Joan Duran came in the 9th inning of the All-Star game in Philadelphia and they'll play his intro on national television. You know, I think that's cool.
Do you think they'll do it at the All-Star game? Would they?
I can't imagine they wouldn't. It's his home stadium.
Yeah,
he's coming out.
They wouldn't do it if it was in Milwaukee or something like that. But if it's in Philadelphia, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Who's going to stop him?
Yeah.
I mean, I say that all the time, and then they just are like, well, the rules are the rules, so, you know.
It's not like we make the rules or anything. I'm, like, real torn on Schwarber and Harper. Schwarber's home runs are, you know, that counts very much towards his case. The way he won the All-Star game last year certainly should be on everybody's mind. I think either him or Harper will be invited to take part in the Home Run Derby. And so if one of them doesn't make it, they'll certainly at least get to be there. I actually think Harper's pretty deserving this year. He's done well. He's better than I thought he would. It's not like elite level, but he's certainly improved over what we've seen in the past. He's not letting fastballs pass him by anymore, which thank God.
Justin, same question to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Who picks the pitchers for the All-Star game? That's not a fan vote.
Right. No, it's not a fan vote. That's a managerial vote.
How does that
work
again? That's the managerial. Okay. So I think that gives Wheeler a better shot because, you know, my instinct is like, yeah, Wheeler might want to sit that out. But then I started thinking his missed time, if he makes the roster, that could make it more likely that he does participate because he's like, yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, I had that extra quote unquote rest to start the season. So I'm not feeling like this is going to be extra pitching that obliterates my schedule or whatever for the rest of the season. So maybe he wants to get a little extra action. And I think, you know, we're talking about whatever kind of boost the Phillies could get being the team that's hosting the All-Star game. That probably has more to do with Schwarber, Harper, like being their openness to playing either in the game itself or in the Home Run Derby. Like I have a feeling Harper might be a little more open to it because it's in Philadelphia. Maybe he doesn't do it if it's somewhere else, but you know, he knows that game better than anybody, and he knows what a boost it would be to, like, you know, take part or at least give the Phillies fans somebody to root for in that contest, which I always think should be a rule. I think somebody from the host city should always be in the Home Run Derby just because, you know, it's fun. But as far as like who's out, yeah, I mean, I can see for the same reasons I'm saying maybe Wheeler's like, yeah, I'm into it this year. I could see him just taking it easy, just given the kind of year he's had and wanting to maintain the success he's had. But yeah, I think ultimately if these guys get asked to do something, they're going to say yes. I think they're more likely to say yes this year because it's in Philadelphia. So I want to believe that each one of the guys you mentioned who's deserving to go and is like legitimately deserving to go. You don't really have to squint to make these guys deserving to go is going to get to play here. I think if the Phillies were struggling and not even looking like a playoff team right now, Bryce Harper probably still gets like a tip of the cap from the commissioner because the kind of familiarity we're talking about Marsh only starting to have now, Harper has obviously had for years. And when you think of the Phillies, you know, it's Bryce, you know, Bryce Harper's their superstar. Obviously Schwarber qualifies for that as well. But I think those guys would have been playing, one of those guys would have been playing in this game regardless of what happened on the season. That they're both doing so well, I mean, again, I think that they should all be on the team. But yeah, I think it just comes down to their openness in participation, which I think gets a boost from hosting the game. So I'm going to say Wheeler's probably the best case to not play if he is named to the team. But I really don't see a whole lot of like reasons to not participate this year. I think it's just going to be an exciting, cool time. And the team's playing presumably going to still be playing acceptably well at that time. And people are going to be excited to see him. So get in the game.
I think... So with regard to Zach Wheeler, I don't think he makes the team. The National League starting pitching lineup right now is the deepest I can ever remember. And as good as he has been and as great as he has been, he right now is kind of like eighth or ninth in terms of like the starting pitching pecking order in the National League alone. Like it's just it's otherworldly right now what's going on. And so I think given the fact that he, you know, he is still kind of coming off an injury, I would think he will probably prioritize, even though the game is in Philadelphia, I think he would probably prioritize not pitching in the game. I just feel like he's kind of at that point in his career where I think the World Series is the main thing for him. I don't think he would be named to the team anyway, unless multiple pitchers decided to pull out. And then, you know, all bets are off at that point. And we saw that, you know, a couple years ago when the Phillies got eight guys sent to the team. A couple of those guys went as injury replacements. So, but I don't think Wheeler is an All-Star. I think Juan Duran is a lock. There's no way he doesn't make the All-Star team. I think Kyle Schwarber is a lock I mean, he's the second best DH in the National League by far, the National League home run leader. And again, like you said, Justin, what he did last year in the extra inning home run derby off, that single-handedly, they got to want him back just in case that situation comes up again. You know, they're going to have him back. So the interesting case to me is Bryce Harper. And you, again, I don't think managers are looking at this in terms of wins above replacement, because his defense this year has not been great. That's really hurting his wins above replacement. Offensively, I think he's probably been the third best National League first baseman this year. Matt Olson, I think, is the clear-cut favorite. He'll start the game, I would imagine. You've got Freddie Freeman, who's also having an outstanding year at first base. But then you look at some of the other first basemen in the National League. Like, are we really talking about Liam Hicks, who's with his 12 home runs? You know, is he going to get it over Sal Stewart? Is he going to get the nod over Bryce Harper, Jake Bowers? Is he going to get the nod? Gavin Sheets, Ryan O'Hearn, like these.
Who are these people? Yeah, I mean, that last Spencer guy Horowitz, that is made up.
As Horowitz and Burleson of the Pirates and the Cardinals, they have slightly better wins above replacement than Harper. But, you know, I just don't think those guys are going to get the nod over Harper. So I think the Phillies have five guys. I think the only one on this list who doesn't make it is Wheeler. I think Marsh is the only other possibility on the outside, honestly. I think Sanchez is a lock. Duran is a lock. Schwarber is a lock. Those three are locks. I think Harper has a better chance of making the All-Star team than Marsh right now, just based off of the players and who he's going to be trying to, you know, what he's the squeeze into. I think the pool of first basemen in the National League is far shallower than the pool of outfielders, and that's going to be the issue for Marsh in this scenario. But I think
even if he doesn't make the team, Marsh might just like be there.
Yeah, I think he's really good chance probably be there.
He's just there.
Just still be there.
I mean, I guess he would be in like street clothes, but I don't know. I could see him just like being on the field in his uniform, but not an all-star whatsoever.
He should be. They find someplace for him. They should find someplace for him.
Just doing little bits between the bats and the home run derby and stuff.
I mean, the
Phillies have got to start an all-star campaign for him.
They are. It's already going.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. It's already going. It was on the game on Friday night's game. I mean, they had the Fanatic up in the booth, but they're like pushing for Marsh. Marsh, Marsh, Marsh. You're going to see it. It's happening. It's happening.
Excellent.
Marsh Madness.
Good. What's that, Justin?
The Marsh Madness.
The Marsh Madness. Yeah, yeah.
It's what my favorite shirt says. Yeah, thank you.
It's absolutely. I mean, if they're not pushing that, like hashtag Marsh Madness, people don't do hashtags anymore. So I'm thinking about the hashtags.
So it's because Twitter is a broken and horrible place.
That's right. That's right. All right. Last thing before we wrap up, I did want to just quickly get your guys' thoughts on Andrew Painter and what the Phillies should do with him. I mentioned at the start of the show he had a really rough outing on Saturday. Could not throw strikes. Is nowhere near the strike zone, especially in the first inning. His fastball is a major problem right now. It's what's led to his 6.21 ERA. So it's the same problem he had in AAA last year. He didn't get anybody out last year in AAA. And if we're honest with ourselves, he didn't really earn his spot in the big league rotation to start this season. He had a very poor year in AAA, but we all just kind of thought, well, coming back off of Tommy John, he needed that year to get his feet under him. He's going to come back and pitch better here in the majors. And it's been really the same issues going back to last year. The shape of his fastball, the location of his fastball since his surgery has not returned to what it was before his Tommy John surgery. The velocity is there, but the shape and the location have not returned. He still hasn't found it. And that's been the big problem. In The Athletic, they mentioned he threw his fastball only 27 times in Saturday's start, second lowest total in his 27 outings. Hitters are batting .390 off of it. That's the fifth worst among starting pitchers league-wide. They're slugging .585 against it. We're also seeing with Painter, like, he's not finishing his pitches, is what Caleb Cotham is saying. He's not getting enough extension on his pitches. As big a guy as he is, he's pitching smaller than his size based off of his arm extension and everything else. Like, there's a lot of mechanical stuff going on right now with Andrew Painter. And I had the thought, you know, he's never really shown at AAA he can do it. Why is he at the big leagues right now? And I get it. Like, there's not a clear answer. Alan Ronhell maybe would be the guy you'd call up to replace him. Is it better to just let Andrew Painter try to work this out in the big leagues? Liz, let me throw that your way first. Is it better to let Andrew Painter try and figure all this stuff out in the majors?
Ooh, I don't know. It depends on what his mindset is and whether or not he feels he's capable to handle it, because there's going to be a lot more difficult starts. And not that that wouldn't be the case down in AAA, but the stakes would certainly be lower and there'd be fewer eyes on him. And I think it mostly depends on what, I mean, the Phillies are going to make their own decision, but I think it just depends on whether or not he's able to handle it, you know, because they don't have a great option down in AAA. Like, there's no one, as you said, there's no one like super duper obvious that would come up. And so, like, there isn't, if they're not going to get anything better, then there's no harm in letting him do it, unless it's going to harm Painter, unless it's going to really make it difficult. I mean, not every pitcher, not every player wants to be working on stuff in the big leagues like this, especially a young guy like Andrew Painter, who's up for the first time and is kind of dealing with being shoved into the pool without those water wings or before he's been fully taught how to swim. You know, I also agreed. I thought it was very, the Phillies tend to have a history of bringing guys up before they're really ready for it. And this felt to me like they were doing that. And all we could do is hope that it would work out. Thus far, it hasn't. And I think they need to figure out not just how to make his pitching work, but how to put him in the best place to succeed. And I think that is getting lost here a little bit. That the most important thing is for him to be confident in his skills. And he doesn't seem that way right now. And if he goes out onto the mound not confident, he's going to get shelled every time, no matter how well he could pitch, no matter how well he is, how high his ceiling really is.
Justin, what do you think, man?
The Phillies' history of promoting guys too soon is matched only by their history of waiting too long to promote players as well.
There's no sweet spot, is there?
Man, we love this organization.
With Painter... losing, he's lost faith in his fastball. You can see just from the usage, like initially throwing it and it not working and then just throwing it less. The fastball command was an issue in his last start. And the good news here is that I don't think it's really been a steady plummet from him stepping onto a major league mound and just like getting bad and staying bad. There's been like signs of success and signs of progress throughout the way. His last two starts have not been those kinds of signs, but they came after, you know, a start against Boston. He goes five innings and allows only a run. It's a six inning start against the Reds, a six inning start against the Guardians. Like he was lasting longer and allowing fewer runs, even in games the Phillies were losing. Like he was looking better. And then these last two starts against the Dodgers and White Sox weren't great. I think largely what you're seeing is a guy who is young and learning to pitch in Major League Baseball, but he's in a very unique spot. I think when the Phillies imagined promoting Andrew Painter the first time, he was young and a rookie, but he was going to be a guy who's going to be contributing right away, even with a learning curve, given the heights from which he was measured as a prospect and as a pitcher. When you talk about, you know, the Phillies wanting to be eager to capitalize on their farm system success stories, I mean, yeah, like we're saying, there's not a whole lot behind him, even from like an acceptable substitute quad A guy situation. With his Bryce Wilson down there, is he's probably a guy that's going to get a shot in like he's got to make his one start of the year at some point. But I think they imagined this being like, yeah, he's going to come up, and when he's up, he's going to be ready. We're going to make sure he's ready, and he's going to be a contributor. He's not going to be a question mark rookie that we've got to figure things out about. He's going to be this great young pitcher who can start contributing even with a few hiccups along the way. Then the whole Tommy John thing happens. That throws all of this into disarray. And now Andrew Painter is up because, you know, the Phillies need him because they need another starting pitcher. And Dombrowski was like, yeah, it's time to start taking advantage of the farm system and not getting a high priced free agent or trade to fill every role. And he's right. You know, you got to work him in at some point. But I think he's more of a question mark than the Phillies expected him to be when he reached this point. So I guess where I'm at is I'm not losing complete faith in Andrew Painter here because I think he's fallen too far right now to not be fixable. Like it's too dramatic of a change for him to go from the best prospect in baseball, so going through everything and then coming back and now he doesn't trust his fastball. Part of this is stuff that like Caleb Cotham's going to like work out with him. When you talk about mechanics, when you talk about command, like these are things like, oh yeah, he comes back the next week and he tweaked something and something started working again. There's an overall mental capacity to this that's going to be harder, I think, to fix, and just the general adjustment of being a major league player and, you know, facing the best hitters he's ever faced. That's all going to be a part of this too. And I think it's just an unfortunate, like the Phillies are watching a guy who has more to figure out than perhaps they hoped he would by the time he was in the majors. And, you know,
like Lizardo is probably thinking right now, he wants to match some of these top tier performances that the rotation is producing. He wants to be part of this big strength that the team has. So he's probably putting pressure on himself too. So I think you're just seeing a guy go through all the regular rigors of being a major league rookie with high expectations on top of recovering from a long-term surgery, and maybe his body's working in a different way than it did before. But I think this is recoverable, and I don't think the Phillies are going to give up on him, partially because of the grim nature of the of what Liz just said, that there really isn't an obvious replacement to come up and swap him out with anyway.
I think I agree with all of everything you guys both said. I do think, though, that if he is still has an ERA over six and we're coming up on the All-Star break, something will change. I don't think they'll continue to throw him out there to get bludgeoned every start. Because
even with an offense that can score a little more, yeah, you can't have a guy starting every good 5 days and giving up six runs. No, yeah, exactly.
It's not good for him. And so, but I think for now, I think it's fine to stay the course. But I think, you know, I don't want him to have the spot in the rotation just based off of what we hoped he would be 3 years ago, instead of the pitcher that he is right now post Tommy John surgery, and allow him the time without the glare of the spotlight on him to try and get that underway. All right, let's finish up here with some final thoughts real quick. Liz, why don't you start us off with any final thoughts?
It was really awesome to see Boehm and Garcia, and Marsh is always in a good mood, really, but the dugout was having a great time this weekend. The hitting, I mean, it's a strange thing what hitting well will do to a team's morale. But everyone was just having fun. Alec Boehm was smiling more than I've seen him smile in a long, long time. That was great. I would like to comment about Sunday's game, which was somehow great, but also excruciatingly terrible to watch. It was over 3 hours.
Yeah, it was long.
It was long. It was slow. And, like, one of the issues that Aaron Nola... And I think some of it is that he's, you know, being caught by Marchand. He had an issue with the pitch clock, like, early in the game and could not get back on track. He just could. After that, he was uncomfortable until he was taken out. And that really, that's the Aaron Nola we know and know. But, yeah, it was an unpleasant game to watch on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Sunday was long. It was the longest game since 2022, I think I saw, because with the pitch clock, all these games are under 3 hours now. But one of the positives of the long game was it was proof the Phillies were working good long at bats. But that does push the game length up a little bit more.
If they had lost, I would have been so angry to have wasted my time on that game.
Yeah, it was a nice comeback for them. I mean, there was a game went back and forth, and when they went down the sixth inning, I wasn't sure they were going to bounce back up from that one, but the offense did a real good job. All right, Justin, final thoughts.
So I think the shorthand for Rob Manfred, you can say, is that he's ignorant of the human element of fandom. Like if you have less than $1 billion in holdings, Rob Manfred does not understand how your brain works. And this is largely coming from his comment before about the A's moving, where he was like, well, we have a team in the Bay Area still, so just root for that team. Like, that tells you what this guy's understanding of fandom is, that people could just, oh yeah, I'll just switch allegiances after all this year. It's all baseball. It's all the same. So I wrote some shorthand for that while you guys were talking. The other thing is, new dirty inning this week, 1961 Phillies. This was going back to some of those egregious stats about the Phillies offense that you saw pop up back when they had a bad offense, and how unproductive they were. That's not the case anymore. This is a high functioning offense and everybody's doing great and it's all sunshine and rainbows. But before, they were comped to the 1961 Phillies, among other teams, like the 1941 Phillies featured in Summer of the Cheap Wieners. But the 1961 Phillies were managed by Gene Mock. They were also a struggling offensive team, and we talked about a streak of their struggles that season. That was a lot of fun because the Mock era is one of my favorites to talk about, and it was great to do another Gene Mock episode of The Dirty Inning. So that'll be up this week as well over at the Hidden Season Patreon at patreon.com/hiddenseason.
Yeah, as I was going to say, you can access that over at patreon.com/hiddenseason if you want to check that out, and I highly recommend that you do. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And I want to encourage everybody, make sure to tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. Now that it actually is Hittin' Season again and the offense is doing their job, a little bit more fun to watch here. They're going to take on the Toronto Blue Jays up north for three games starting on Monday, going through Tuesday, Wednesday. So finally facing a team that is not over 500. So hopefully the Phils will keep their winning ways going up north. So again, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you want to send an email to the show, you can always do that by emailing hittinseason@billingpen.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.